This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Hello and welcome to this episode of LGIM Talks. I'm Max Julius, Senior Investment Communications Manager, and I'm delighted to be joined by Tim Drayson, Head of Economics, and Lars Krekel, Global Equity Strategist, both of whom sit within our asset allocation team. Lars and Tim, welcome to the pod.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you've both written extensively about the health of the US economy and what this means for markets. Tim, how would you characterize the state of the US economy today, and how late in the cycle actually are we?
The first thing to note is the US is late cycle, and that's most easily seen by observing the labor market, where unemployment has fallen to extremely low levels, and we're finally getting some wage pressures emerging. Having said that, it doesn't look like the current pace of growth is particularly unsustainable. We have seen some slowdown through the back end of last year to early parts of this year. In fact, I think the first quarter could print quite a miserable GDP number, but I'm hopeful that growth will then reaccelerate through the spring and into the early summer.
Right, and I understand that you and the broad economics team have revised your forecast recently and now expect a soft landing for the economy. What's the rationale behind that?
So this is an interesting development, and I confess I was in the camp worrying that the fiscal stimulus was potentially going to overheat the US economy. But because growth has slowed due to a number of external factors, as well as uncertainty domestically around shutdowns and trade wars, that's actually taken some of the heat out of the US economy. So my inflation worries have diminished, and that's one factor allowing the Federal Reserve to go on pause. So the reason why the cycle would end would be due to higher interest costs making debts more difficult to service. But that process now has been delayed, which increases the probability the US economy can continue to grow into 2020.
Right. And you mentioned trade wars. I think there are lots of factors that are quite hard to price into your models that are related risks, geopolitical, domestic political risks. How do you adjust your estimates for those sorts of issues?
Well, the key variable is uncertainty, and that's led to deferral of business investment plans. Although we don't have the data yet for the first quarter, it's likely that CapEx slowed as a result of some of these uncertainties. But it also has a positive side effect, and it means that companies haven't been euphoric. They haven't overextended themselves. And typically, to get recessions, you need some kind of imbalance, either household sector spending too much, companies overinvesting, and then running into profitability problems. But we're probably not at that stage yet this cycle.
Lars, and this is related to fiscal policy. Why do you favour companies, US companies, that are exposed to infrastructure spending? These stocks, they had a great 2016, but since then, their performance has been middling at best. And I think it's fair to say that investor sentiment has soured.
Yeah, that's fair, Max. So we do like stocks that are exposed to rebuilding America is the theme, the name of the theme that we give it. So these are infrastructure builders rather than infrastructure operators and infrastructure kind of owners themselves.
What sort of companies would that be?
So you'd be looking at building materials companies, crane manufacturers, okay. those types of things, and companies who build the roads rather than ones that owns the roads,
right,
and maybe
right.
the toll operators at the end. So this is one of the forms of fiscal policy that could still happen, but I think I should probably say at the beginning that we don't actually think a big U.S. infrastructure package is the most likely outcome over the course of this year. There's always been the hope of that happening at some point, and that's been the case for the past few years, probably the last few decades, and it's proven quite elusive. And we still don't think that's particularly likely this year. But I think the crucial thing from an investment perspective is that expectations are also quite low. So sentiment is very bearish on these stocks. You mentioned 2016, there was a bit of a rally, particularly after Trump won the election. A lot of the types of stocks that you could expect his policies to benefit did very well. But over the course of 2017, it became clear that priorities for the U.S. government and for Trump were elsewhere than infrastructure. So we've seen the tax reform they tried on healthcare, and infrastructure didn't happen. And as a result, The share prices have come back to pretty close to multi-year lows. Valuations have come off a long way. And you've also seen, even from the commentary from analysts, infrastructure spending package was a big driver of all the analyst comments, and it's all but disappeared. So I would say the bar for these companies to beat now is quite low, even if we don't see a big infrastructure package passed in 2017.
And what do you...
2019, of course.
Right, right. And... how do you think the political environment would need to change in order to trigger some sort of infrastructure spending? And then secondly, what's the case against taking such an exposure?
Yeah, I think there are various scenarios where I would expect these types of companies to do well. The first one being that perhaps the gridlock in Washington is not as bad as it seems. And I know it's difficult sitting here today and reading the news on a daily basis to think anything could ever get done in Washington. But I think if you look closely, that it's not as bad perhaps as it seems. We, for example, had a bipartisan criminal justice reform passed recently where Democrats and Republicans cooperated. And I would argue if there's any scope of something getting done between the two parties over the next year or so, it would be infrastructure. Both parties have this quite high near the top of their agendas, and both parties would have something to gain. So Trump would be able to point towards another promise delivered. It is consistent with his America First policies. It would create jobs for his core voters. And Democrats as well have been talking about wanting to pass infrastructure for quite some time. And as a party that wants to take over government at the 2020 election, they do need to show that they're not just obstructing, but they also are able to govern.
Very interesting. And the case against your view?
So I think one of the bigger cases, of course, apart from some, you know, nothing getting done, would be that if the Democrats or Republicans turn out in the next election, for example, to basically ignore infrastructure, it turns out to move down the agenda quite rapidly. And another sort of fundamental argument would be that perhaps wage pressures in that sector accelerate and escalate, which would eat up a good chunk of the gains maybe companies would have from greater revenues.
You could probably add the fiscal conservatives balking at the additional deficit costs involved in a large infrastructure plan.
Very interesting. Tim, if we could... move to monetary policy, move back to monetary policy. I think it's fair to say that the Fed has been on a bit of a journey of late, with Jay Powell beating a hasty retreat from the hawkish stance he took out even as late as last year. How have you changed your view of the Fed's reaction function?
So the Fed have taken quite a lot of flack for this apparent capitulation. Some of it is just justified due to how the economy evolved. So we did see a material tightening of financial conditions during the fourth quarter. Global growth has disappointed. So it would be natural for the Fed to reduce the path of future interest rate increases. For me, though, what's particularly fascinating is above that, we've also seen a change in their reaction function. So there's two new members to the Board of Governors, Richard Clarida, John Williams. They're really the intellectual drive behind Federal Reserve thinking. So by his own admission, Jay Powell is not an academic economist. He's looking for those PhD economists to kind of really drive the Fed's thinking. And I think there has been a subtle shift. I mean, partly as a result of the experience of late last year, where inflation expectations dropped quite sharply and surprisingly sharply, given the economy is at full employment. So the Fed's beginning to worry about a permanent de-anchoring of inflation expectations. So inflation running persistently below target consistent levels. So in the process of shifting their thinking towards perhaps what's termed an average inflation target, and that means they need to opt for inflation slightly above targets in the good times to offset the risk that in the next recession, inflation could get stuck below target. And this takes us back to the so-called zero lower bound problem. And the Fed only has limited space to cut interest rates. And once they get back down to zero, it might be hard to deliver the stimulus necessary to get inflation back up to target. And of course, markets will anticipate where inflation is going to reside over the entire cycle. And therefore, maybe it's necessary for the Fed to aim a little bit higher in order to re-anchor inflation expectations back around that 2% level.
Very interesting. And on markets, do you think market pricing for the Fed's future rates trajectory is about right now, or do they have it off a bit?
So I think in the near term, the market is correct to assume the Fed is likely to be on hold for the next few meetings. So a very flat part of the front end is justifiable. Beyond that time horizon...
The front end of the US yield curve.
Indeed, yes. Beyond that time horizon, as we go into 2020, I think it becomes more interesting because paradoxically, by keeping rates lower now, it increases the chance that actually inflation will rise and the US economy will continue to perform well, which will therefore strengthen the case to actually resume some tightening perhaps in 2020. And a lot of this now reverts back to what will happen to fiscal policy. You know, were we to get an infrastructure package, which we think is unlikely, and so maybe uplift the spending, that could add to inflationary pressure at a time when the US economy is very late cycle, and we could see the Fed coming back into play. And at the moment, the market is actually leaning towards rates being cut in 2020 rather than further increases.
So I have a related final question to that point, which is beyond the infrastructure exposed stocks, where do you both in the broader asset allocation team see most opportunities in dollar assets?
Well, maybe if I start on that one. So as far as US equities are concerned, we're not actually that optimistic, but that's compared to other regions. So what Tim has laid out in terms of becoming later in the cycle, I think, is a positive scenario for equity risk, all else equal. But we do see US equities within that context to be at the more expensive end of the range, and also for US earnings growth after several years of outgrowing other regions such as Europe to actually kind of be in line or maybe lagging behind a little bit. So not that optimistic for US equity specifically, but within that, an area we particularly like in the US is the tech sector, where, of course, the US is one of the dominant regions. So the NASDAQ is an area that we quite like. And some of that argument links back to what Tim has been saying about the economy as well. We see the tech sector from a macro perspective as quite attractive in a late cycle type of environment, where, first of all, the wage pressures maybe start to continue to build up, and the tech sector is relatively unexposed to that. So that's a headwind that many companies will face, but the tech sector will face a lot less. And another area is that we would see the tech sector as a prime candidate to do well in sort of a retail bubble scenario. That's not our base case, but the longer the cycle lasts, the
retail
investors coming back into the market, and that potentially then causing an overshoot in equity, which you often see at the end of a bull market. We haven't seen that, and it's not exactly our base case, but in that type of scenario, we would expect the tech sector to do well. You need to see sort of a narrative that retail investors can buy into, and I think tech is an obvious candidate for that this time around.
Right, thank you. Tim, do you have any market views perhaps related to what we were discussing earlier?
Yes, I've alluded to this already, but in our funds we are positioned for interest rates, particularly in the 2020 part of the interest rate futures curve, to rise more aggressively than the market currently prices, which... it's actually for a marginal cut.
Very interesting. Well, I think that's a great point on which to end this podcast. Tim Drayson, Lars Krekel, thank you very much for joining us today. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. To find out more, please visit LGIM.com.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.